Hello, fellow Egypts. Welcome to Taranoia. With me, Tara Flynn, the inventor, the founder of Taranoia, the discoverer of Taranoia, and my own special brand of fear and insecurity. You know the fears and insecurities we all face every day, the way we can self-sabotage and stop ourselves doing things and talk ourselves out of things. I have my own special brand of that, but I battle it to get stuff done because at the end of the day, we're all Egypts. But we're all doing our best. So welcome. Welcome to Taranoia. And this week's episode is sponsored by Fluxodol. I don't know what Fluxodol is either, but a listener sent me the brand name, so I'm going to take it on. Fluxodol. Thanks, T, in France. Thank you for your suggestion. Fluxodol. Fluxodol is a kind of tincture of which you put a few drops under your tongue when faced with terrifying wallpaper, like flock wallpaper. Hence, Fluxodol. Having to visit an elderly relative or staying in a creepy hotel? Can you not sleep because of the terrifying imagery brought to you by the embossed wallpaper shrieking at you from the 70s and beyond? Something like The Shining, but even more present and not a film set. Fluxodol. Just place a few old drops under the tongue and you won't be bothered by the wallpaper anymore. Some people say it's alcohol. It's not. It's Fluxodol. Fluxodol. Take some if you're over 18. May contain traces of alcohol. It's alcohol. It's Fluxodol. It's alcohol. Thank you, T, for that suggestion. And thank you, Fluxodol, for the amazing sponsorship. Where would we be without you? It's Lent. It's Lent. So stop enjoying yourselves, you heathens. Yeah, I don't do Lent anymore. But it's sort of, in Ireland, it's treated like a 40-day cleanse. Like people stop drinking or they stop eating chocolate, but they eat shit tons of eggs on Pancake Tuesday to get rid of the eggs. Like, they're not going to eat eggs for the whole time. Like, come on, we all know what we're dealing with here. You use Lent as an excuse to drop a few pounds or get a little bit more enlightened. Yeah, we know you do. Let's face it, Jesus was the first celebrity. He was a bit of an influencer. He did 40 days and nights in the desert, which is really impressive. I mean, it's impressive on the face of it. It's also really foolhardy if you're not the son of God, because you're going to lose muscle mass. Your organs could be threatened by dehydration. I mean, no wonder he had visions. If it was me, I'd be having visions of sandwiches. But he had visions of cities and Satan and the future. But fair play to him, he came back into town and he changed history. But word had got round, so he was the first influencer. Do you think he had to buy or rent that donkey when he rode into Jerusalem on that donkey? I was going to say ass, but I thought people might find it disrespectful. When he rode into Jerusalem on that donkey, everyone went donkey crazy after that. Everyone went out and got a donkey. See, people knew that Jesus riding the donkey would create a lot of donkey-related interest. And so from then on, even though they were popular enough in the Middle East at the time, there was a donkey explosion post-first Easter, post-Palm Sunday. Jesus was an influencer. He didn't have to buy his donkey. And look, if Jesus wasn't a celebrity, how come there are so many candid portraits of him? The paps were everywhere with their easels and their oil paints getting beautifully lit shots. So I think we have to say that Jesus was the first celebrity. And fair play to him. Fair play to him. If I could get a free donkey, like I've discussed before, I wouldn't know where I'd put it. I'd find a way. If anyone wants to sponsor me with a donkey, I will appear with that donkey. I'll do some candid selfies with the donkey. Not sexy ones. Get your minds out of the gutter. I meant kind of nice ones of us sharing an apple or going for a walk. Things like that. Oh, you're filthy, the lot of you. Mind you, everything's filth these days, isn't it? In a good way, in some ways, but there's still that bit of judgment. I got a lovely bit of spam there saying hot, loose girls in your area are ready to whatever they do. Sure, it involves donkeys some of the time. But let's think about that. Hot, loose girls. It sounds like, well, in the season of hot cross buns, it sounds like something you get in the bakery, but it's just a big pile of crumbs. Hot, loose girls. It's a pancake that didn't quite come together. That's why I don't eat pancakes. I rarely eat eggs anymore, if ever. It's a long time since I had an egg, let me tell you that. I don't really like pancakes unless someone else is making them, because when I make them without those egg-free ones, which they taste quite good, but they really stick to the pan. So what I get is what you could term a hot loose cake. It's not a pancake, but hot loose girls are in your area. What does loose mean? Well, it kind of means promiscuous, doesn't it? It means a bit slutty, all those kind of derogatory connotations. And actually, what you're talking about there is a woman with agency going, I'm up for it. I consent. I'm up for it. Maybe not with everyone. Just because someone wants to do it with lots of people doesn't mean they want to do it with us. And that's their prerogative. But the whole idea that some girls are loose and some girls are tight, I suppose physically that could be true. But the idea that the not in a physical sense, but that some girls are easy and some girls are to be conquered. It feeds into all that debatey stuff, doesn't it? I crushed her by being louder. It doesn't matter if I made any sense. I just kept talking over her and going, yeah, you don't even know. What about facts? Facts don't care about your pancakes. I'm not for all that. Anyway, welcome to my neighbourhood, hot loose girls. You're very welcome. Us cold, tight girls. Don't think I could qualify as that either, now that I think about the classifications. But the rest of us girls who are somewhere between loose and tight and somewhere between hot and cold, we welcome you. You're welcome to our area. I've no idea how you knew where my area was. It might be spam. Who's to say? I wrote a bit about Lent in my book, Your Grand, The Irish Woman's Secret Guide to Life. It's out of print now, but it lives on, as everything does, on the internet as an ebook. You can buy it if you like. I think it's quite cheap and you don't have to use any paper to read it. But here it is. Here's a book I prepared earlier. So I wrote about the 40-day annual detox, brackets optional. Health is, of course, worth worrying about, because the book, you see, is about things we should worry about and things we shouldn't worry about. How can we be grand, just fine in our daily life? You wouldn't hope for more than grand, but grand is something you should aim for. And true health is not just about avoiding illness. It's peak health you're after. You want to be the best, grand, rosy-cheeked woman you can be, or man, with a spring in your step and a twinkle in your eye and all the rest of it. Detoxes have recently become the cool way to shed a few pounds, shift a few zits, and generally feel self-righteous and smug. No one enjoys feeling smug like an Irish woman does when she's doing her annual cleanse, or as we call it, Lent. Even if you're not religious, this church-sanctioned 40-day detox has become every Irish woman's secret weapon for years. We may not diet much, but we love feeling smug because we so rarely get to feel smug, you see. So how it works? You give up everything you like for 40 days for Jesus, except on St. Patrick's Day. On St. Patrick's Day, you can go nuts on chocolate or brandy or lard. You can even go nuts on nuts if that's your poison. 39 days really, because of St. Patrick's Day. 40 days later, you break this fast feeling really good about yourself, knowing that Jesus is proud of you too. So keep your juice fasts and retreats. Our way is easy, doable by almost everyone, and it also saves you a few quid. Even heathens can get down with that. Thank you, book. There, see, I have a real book, not an e-book. You won't get them anymore now. They're like hen's teeth. That was my Lenten rant. There you go. So I was talking about Jesus being a celebrity. I want to talk about fame because I'm just back from LA. That's right, Los Angeles. As you know, it's not as glam as you might think. Like, I wasn't out there doing meetings. I wasn't out there doing tours of Homes of the Stars. Carl, my husband, is from LA. So we have to go back every now and again to see everyone there, to see the people we know, and to touch base a bit with the people who are in the industry that we knew from here and who maybe got famous and went out there. Some of them are still our friends and we like to see them. And I love LA. I absolutely love it. But it's not like I haven't been back in 5 years. So there were loads that had changed. There were a lot more visible homeless people. And that's always been the way. There are always veterans, homeless veterans on the streets in many West Coast cities. I think it's maybe the warmer climates. I don't know too much about it, but I know that in LA, it's always been very visible. It's more visible this time. And talking to people, they basically have met and heard about other people who are living in camper vans and things like that. So you don't see them so much on the streets, but it's visible on the streets for sure. LA has everything. It's so vast. So it has everything from the super, super wealthy and powerful to the super, super poor, the destitute, the homeless. And it's kind of humbling in that way. It's a real teacher, I think, in that way. I love being there because you can see what people can achieve in terms of creativity. You can see the pinnacle of that. You can see the pinnacle of fun. There's all kinds of theme parks and rides and all of that end of things. There's studios and studio tours and incredible, insane mansions. And there are also people doing their best to get by. People who've bought the idea of the American dream and beating themselves up because the American dream has shut them out because they weren't born rich or they weren't born white or whatever it is that's the barrier to their achieving their dream. That isn't immigrants and it isn't outside factors. It's the system. It's the fact that if you're born rich and connected, that's often how it happens. And the other thing is, every now and again, someone does achieve their dream. They do arrive in LA on a Greyhound bus with their picture under their arm. And they do get into a meeting and it does happen from there. Usually how it happens is really long, hard graft, being there for years and years and years and getting a break or getting famous in another territory and arriving in LA with a bit of curiosity about you. Like if you've done something huge like Downton Abbey, that's gone on in America as well, but that was definitely huge in your own territory, you'll get meetings. They'll all take the meetings. They'll take the first meeting. They're afraid of missing out on something new. But you might not get the second meeting if there's no buzz or if you don't have a champion or a manager or something like that pushing for you. Here's the thing people don't realize about fame as opposed to success within the entertainment industry or literary industry or something like that, where you need an audience to be successful, to buy your work or to read or to view your work. If you don't have a manager or someone like that pressing for you, you won't be on the covers of magazines. You won't have feature spreads. Even if you're going to the Edinburgh Fringe, you'll see who has the best management usually by whether they have those feature length spreads by April in the broadsheets. Have a look out for that, because that doesn't happen by accident. That's not just some canny reporter going around going, I wonder who's interesting this year, though there'll be a bit of that. But usually it's what? There's too much. So it lands on their desk. And if you send in your own press release, it might get read and it might pique their interest. What's more likely is that you've got a very well connected manager who's hungry to get you onto covers or into spreads. That's how it happens the world over. It's definitely how it happens in LA. You already need to know people. So the networking is as much a part of it as the work. So if you've got a calling card of something pretty famous or a success in your own territory and you arrive in LA, and that could be another American city, it could be overseas, but you arrive in LA and then you're a good networker, it's likely you'll get on. Now, a lot of it is still luck. That's the graft. That's the graft you need to do. This is a really good summing up of it. I went to do an acting class in LA years ago. And one of the things they taught us was that LA is like the Olympics of the entertainment industry. Hollywood is the Olympics. So if you aren't knocking it out of the park in the local heats, in your own local area, then why would you imagine you could compete in the Olympics? Now, that's not across the board. That's not like a big law or rule, but it is a good guideline because it is so competitive. And the other thing out there is that this lovely self-deprecation we have here, which keeps us grounded, and it is good. It is good sometimes to stay humble and to be grateful. That's something that you really have to keep an eye on, especially if you start to become successful. But if you go somewhere like LA where it's really competitive and other people are bigging themselves up and you're going, I'm only just fine. They go, well, if you don't believe in yourself, why would I believe in you? So it's all something to think about. And I usually come back from there a little bit fired up, wanting to work harder. Work harder, do more and do more of what I really think are my strengths. So I'm going to be writing lots and lots and lots in the next few weeks. I'm very fired up about it. So thank you, LA, for doing that for me. It's a really strange phenomenon when people you know, people you start out with get famous. I'm talking that mega famous because if you stay in a business long enough, you'll become known for your work. You might not be a star, but you'll become known for your work. And it's really interesting when people get to be stars. seeing the various routes for that to happen. They're usually one of the outlined above. Sometimes it's sheer luck. Sometimes it's someone sitting in an audience that you didn't know was there, who has a lot of influence and then becomes your champion. And you get to know them and you both do the graph together. It can be all kinds of things. But when people get that, it's really interesting what changes for them. It's very interesting to be celeb adjacent, because when you work in this industry, lots of your friends do get to be mega famous and recognisable. And then nights out are not ruined, because it's always lovely to chat to people. But when strangers constantly come up to the mega famous friend, you're two sentences into a chat and they turn around and they give the photograph or they give the chat, and you never get to have quality time with each other. See, I think there are boundaries. I want to do my work for the public. Here's my public work. I think if they're on a private night off, I feel like we should give them some space within reason. I mean, this is the other thing. Most people want to connect with people that like their work or that want to chat about it. Most people are curious and want to say hi, but some people are very shy off camera or outside of the interview circuit. They do it as a necessary evil. Some people are shy. Some people are maybe having a bad day, or they're with their families. And I guess it's just to remember that it's not that they don't want to talk to us. It's that they're maybe doing something else. And so if they do give a photograph, great, but maybe say thank you and tootle off. Or if they say, I'm sorry, I'm not doing photographs, don't take it in your nose. Just, you don't know what else is going on for them in the day. It might seem rude to you, but maybe they just aren't able at the time. It's just something to think about. But when they get really, really famous, they have to worry about things like their phones being tapped. I know a couple of people that's happened to. People camping outside their homes trying to get pictures. Somebody in LA again, they said, when you make it, you need to get a lawyer. And I was like, why? Because of defamation and false stories and filling out contracts. And they said, no. Because people are going to start trying to sue you. When people think there's money there to be had, they're going to try and get it somehow. I thought that makes sense. That fits, but I think it's horrible. The thing is, there are perks to getting well known, especially that super well known. People sending you clothes to wear or cars to drive. They all sound amazing. I've never been at that kind of level. But you lose your privacy. And that's something, that's a really heavy thing to lose. You might think it sounds great being recognisable. I'm always astounded when people think being famous should be the goal in itself. Because being famous terrifies me. Maybe it's a reason why I'm not more well known. Even though I want people to read my work, I want people to listen to this podcast, I want to act in bigger, better shows. But fame is terrifying. And especially now with the whole internet having its eyes on you at all times, waiting for you to mess up. I just think it's a trade-off for what we do. It's almost a shame that what we do creatively in the entertainment industry requires fame to indicate success. I love people like Olivia Colman who take it with a grain of salt. You don't see them at many parties or things like that. She's got to turn up at her awards show. My God, how amazing was her Oscar speech? She's just a queen. She's fabulous. I think there's something in that, going along with some of the perks, but keeping some of the privacy, not courting all that celebrity. Because make no mistake, people being papped, a lot of that set up by PR teams. If you're on a cover of a magazine and you don't have a product or article or anything out at the moment, that's a PR exercise. That's been set up by your team. And it's important to remember, even if someone is on the cover of a magazine, glam doesn't mean rich. Especially people like actors or writers, they may have been given the clothes for the shoot and they'll be taken off their backs at the end. They could be living in a really tiny place and struggling to pay their bills, but they might be on your telly every week. It used to be just in Ireland, where our audiences are so much smaller, our potential available audiences locally are so much smaller than in the UK even. People would think once you were on telly all the time in Ireland that you were rich. But that's not the case necessarily. an advance from an Irish publisher could be how amazing to get it, but it could be a grand. People think in terms of American advances and that once you have a publication deal, that's it. Now, sometimes you get more, sometimes you get less. Sometimes that depends. Here's the trade-off. It depends on your visibility, depends on your current celebrity status. And isn't that shit? Doesn't matter what the writing is like. Depends on how current you are, how relevant you are, how prevalent you are on social media. All of those things contribute, but it doesn't necessarily mean there are millions floating around, let alone hundreds of thousands, let alone thousands. It's always amazing to be paid for your work. Be grateful every time you're paid for your work. Be grateful every time you get an audience. An audience is a privilege. I've said this a million times. I'm sorry if I'm boring you. I'm so sorry if I'm boring you. I'm unable to perform like some hot, loose girl. There will be overlap in a lot of these podcasts because a lot of the things I'm talking about do intersect. But if there are three people who pay in and come to see you, this podcast reach isn't huge. By the way, please do share it. Please do rate it, review it, share it. Please help us spread this podcast. Listen, Protestants are welcome to listen too. Very welcome. I can't presume to speak for Protestants because I was raised Catholic and now I'm nothing. But you're all very welcome. Please do share this podcast, even though it's not a podcast. Please do share it. Please like it. Please rate it. We are nothing without you. The Patreon page. Please subscribe if you can. Maybe if you can only subscribe for a month. A euro for a month, if not a euro a month. It's so gratefully received because here's the honest truth. This podcast is not sustaining itself at the moment. It gets a few thousand listens, which is wonderful. And we're so grateful. And I'm grateful for every single patron. You are the lifeblood of the podcast. You make the difference between me being able to buy the guests a gift or not, to be able to pay if they have to travel. Wouldn't I love a telly show? I'd love an offer of a telly show, a really nice role in a telly show where someone else has written it and I get to act in it and I get paid and there's a decent audience for it. Oh, I'd pay money to do that, which would defeat the purpose. But that's where I'm at the moment. If you can help to make this podcast self-sustaining over time, we would really appreciate that. We're on patreon.com/Tara Flynn IRL. If you can't, and I get it, it's so difficult to decide where to spend your hard-earned fecking cash these days. So I understand if you want to listen to this for free. I don't want to stop you listening to it for free. I'm just saying, if you're coming back to it a lot, if you've listened more than once, if you've listened more than five times, do you think you could pay a little towards it? I would be so grateful. If this podcast could sustain itself, that would be amazing because then it's just taken care of and I don't have to look at its viability down the line, which I would love to keep doing it. I love having the chats. I just want it to remain viable. But so just remember, just because someone is in the public eye, they are not necessarily rich. Some people are. When I was doing lots of voiceovers, I had plenty of money. I was really lucky. I'm not doing them now. It's a much bigger pool now, which is fairer, and that's good. But I'm always having to think about what's next. And it's exhausting. It's exciting too. Don't get me wrong. I am not complaining. But you're not going to see me on the cover of magazines because I don't have that kind of management. You're not going to see me. And I'm kind of happy with that. I would feel like we went to a couple of really lovely celebrity parties in LA because there were people we knew at them. And that's so lovely. It's so lovely to see them doing well and celebrate them and feel great for them that they've gone to this huge next level, maybe six levels up. That doesn't mean that we were necessarily, like we got a lift. We didn't get a big chauffeur-driven car or anything. We got a lift to those parties. Every now and again, we took the bus or the train. We didn't hire a car while we were there. And I wanted my Instagram to reflect that some nights we did kind of glam looking things, but at other times we were out and about doing very regular things, taking the bus, taking the train, and that all of that is encapsulated by LA. That's one of the things I absolutely love about the town and why I miss it when I'm not there. I'm intrigued at the moment by younger kids especially saying what they want to do when they grow up is be famous. When I was little, when I was small, you'd always have an idea of what you wanted to do. Now, I wanted to be an actor. I did, but I would never have framed it as I want to be famous. I wanted to play lots of parts. I wanted to do loads of theatre. I wanted to inhabit lots of characters, hot loose girls and beyond. We can all inhabit the character of the hot loose girl or the cold tight girl or the in-between one. But that was my goal, was to play loads of different characters. And I knew what I wanted to be, but I would never have said, I want to be famous. It never drove me. And I'm intrigued now when people say, I want to be famous. They want to be celebrities. They want to be Insta-famous, for instance. So their brand is photos of them. Often they're absolutely stunning and it's creative in itself. The pictures are great. They're inventing little stories. I think that's really creative. But I also wonder if and when they age or if their life changes in some way, what's the substance behind it? I'm not saying it doesn't have substance, but if there isn't something underpinning it, or there isn't a deeper message than a collaboration. Collaborations are great. Listen, I'm going down that donkey route just as soon as a donkey business gets in touch with me. I'm going to get that sweet paper. I need it. I want it. I'm going to get it. And I'm not going to apologize for it. But I think unless you're also saying something or finding a way to say something, I just wonder how it would feel. Yeah, it doesn't appeal to me. It does appeal to Manny, and fair play to you. You and your gorgeous makeup and your gorgeous eyebrows and your fantastic videos are your, I watch you all. I think you're beautiful. Fair play. It just is something that I wonder how long term it can be. And if it's short term, how are you? I mean, you might be able to parlay it into income down the line, but what are you going to do in your life? Like, what's going to feed you? What's going to nourish your creative side? I don't know. It's going to change and mutate. The whole thing's going to take new patterns and paths that none of us can envisage. So what am I even talking about? We just don't know. I'm certainly not judging or condemning. I think they're feckin' great. It's just that wanting to be famous in and of itself is a very strange goal to me. You can be very, very lonely when people you don't know recognize you. It can feel really strange. Imagine it if it's never happened to you. You're just sitting there and someone comes over. And it's, by the way, how gorgeous is that, that someone would take the time and energy? It's so appreciated. I understand why it can get intrusive if it's happening lots, if you're at that level of fame. But if it's someone like me and someone has enjoyed my work or worked hard on the repeal campaign themselves and wants to say hi, shout out, solidarity, how lovely is that? That is lovely and it lifts your spirits. But even when it lifts your spirits, you can be left feeling a little bit, wow, I didn't know they were going to come over. I thought I was perfectly private sitting right here, but I'm in public. Even when I was having my private thoughts, I'm in public. And what if I slip up? What if I snap because the server was rude to me and now I'm being rude back? At the end of the night, three strikes and you're out. That happened to me in LA. And I thought, what if that happened in Dublin? Because it could, except I've never experienced a server as rude as this person. Wow, you would never know that the tipping culture was so huge there. Anyway, I did. I am not proud of my snapping moment, but this person had already snapped at someone else in the party. I'd gone down to try and close off my bill and they'd been really condescending and told me I couldn't close off my bill and they would do it at the end. And they were, anyway, listen, it doesn't matter. They were rude and then I was rude back. I'm not proud of it. I haven't been a server myself. But I would never have spoken to a customer the way that this person spoke to the other person in the party or to me. And again, I'm not proud of it. I'm not saying I did the right thing. But I'm saying if I were an onlooker, I would, and knew the whole story, I would understand. But if someone were recording it or something, it would be all over the internet if someone did know me. And it's like, people are humans. And it's human to sometimes feel lonely even in a crowd. And there's no bigger crowd than celebrity, where everyone feels that they've got the right to comment on how you look or what you do. And the thing is, they do. If they're paying money, this happens all the time. If an audience pays in and only three of them come, you can't feel downhearted. You can't go, oh, for God's sake, there's nobody here. I heard a younger comic doing this recently, saying, oh, God, there's nobody here. And I was like, there are three people here to see you. They left their houses. They left their flats. They travelled on public transport. They got here in the cold. They're here to see you and they've paid in. You give them your best show. You've got to be grateful for every single person that contributes to your success, that pays for your content. So you have asked to be in the public eye, but I do feel like we need to keep our boundaries. And that's from both sides. We need on the side of people asking for public engagement, we need to be clearer on what our boundaries are. I think curating your Instagram and maybe not putting up your home address and things like that, I think those things are okay. Not putting up photos of your kids if you're not comfortable with it. I think all that's good stuff. But then that people say, oh, you have some boundaries. How dare you? You've asked for public engagement. I think there's a separation point. That's not to say you can't ask for a bit of chat or ask for a response. Just know that the person's time is finite and their patience might be finite. I know mine is. I'm a fucking bitch, lads. Yeah, I am. My patience often snaps. And sometimes gonna happen in full public view. Yeah. Oh, thank goodness I've told you about it here several times. So, yeah, just know that if someone snaps and says, I don't want to take a photograph or something like that, there might be more to the story. And I think it's good to remember there's more to the story. The first celebrity I ever met was Maureen O'Hara. I know that's kind of a massive one. She had a home down in West Cork. And I lived in Kinsale, the gateway to West Cork. And my granduncle knew her husband. So I don't know how it happened, but she invited myself and my mum and dad and my sister. We all went down to her house for tea one day. So there are pictures. I put them up on Instagram when she died, I think. Pictures of me sitting on her lap. It's mad. She signed my Noddy book. I had a little Noddy hardback book and she signed it. And I don't know where it is. You do book clear outs in your life and when you grow past Noddy, you forget the amazing Hollywood autograph that's inside the front cover. But I've been fascinated with her ever since. She's an absolute icon and I can't believe I met her. So that was an early brush with celebrity. You'd think everything would pale after that. But after that, we were up in Dublin for a few days and we were in a coffee shop, I think it was. And Eamon Andrews was there. Eamon Andrews, you know, this is your life. Yeah, anyone who's 50 or over will remember Eamon Andrews hosted This Is Your Life. And he was Irish, but he'd made it in Britain. You know, hashtag goals. Anyway, I couldn't stop looking at him. I was just doing that celeb spot 101. Do not stare at them. It's not polite. They're having their coffee with their friends. Everything I've described earlier. I had no boundaries. I was 7. He beckoned me over. He was giggling away at me and he offered to sign. I had a book of riddles. You know, riddle me this. I have 6 arms and no eyes. What am I? I don't know. I just made that up. I'm not good at riddles. Better at the jokes. Anyway, he signed the riddle book. Again, the riddle book is gone. It's gone. And I don't know where it is. So when I think back to those celeb spots, you know, big giant celebs like Maureen O'Hara, Eamon Andrews, I realise that I'm definitely not a celeb. So when people say to me, you're some kind of privileged celeb, you're out of touch with the working man, I'm like, I'm not a celeb. I don't have a manager. You won't see me on those covers. Maybe someday I will. Unlikely, now that I'm going invisible. Please listen back to my podcast about going invisible and ageing and ageism. But maybe I will. Because the other thing about this industry is you just never know. You just never know what twists and turns it will take. I could be on that TV show where I have a great role and it's enjoyable and it pays. I could be on it next week. You never know. Maybe what I should do is go out into the desert for 40 days and 40 nights and meditate and fast upon it. And then maybe it would happen. Did you hear my stomach rumble there? I'm already fasting. You know what? I should go and eat some lunch. It won't be pancakes, I'll tell you that. Listen, have an absolutely lovely Lent. And thank you to everyone. Thank you to the Headstuff Podcast Network. Yeah. Thank you to the Headstuff Podcast Network. Thank you to Brian. Brian, light of my life and auditor of, well, sort of more editor of my auditory output. Thank you so much for everything. Thank you to all the patrons. You're incredible. Thank you. I really appreciate you more than you will ever know. Thank you for every single listen. Even if you can't be a patron, thank you for every single listen. Thank you for every single share, like, rate, review. Please help to keep us in the charts. Rate us, review us. I would love you forever. Give me some hot, loose validation. Hot, loose validation is in your area right now. Thank you. Thank you so much. I really can't say it enough. There's my stomach rumbling again. Holy crap. Is it because I was talking about fasting? What's going on? Anyway, you're welcome. See, I'm just a guy like Jesus. Please don't take offense at that. I don't mean any offense. I happen to think he sounds like a very cool person. I just don't follow up on the extracurricular stuff visited upon the people by the church that ensued. It's time for a Flinspiring, as if this one hasn't been Flinspiring enough. Do put all your eggs in one basket. I know you'll never have heard anything as outrageous and mind-blowing as this, but do put all your eggs in one basket. Like, what are you? Someone with loads of baskets? Are you some kind of millionaire? Do you have a lawyer? Apparently there's going to be loads of lawsuits coming your way if you've got all those baskets. If you don't put all your eggs in one basket, you're going to have a lot of trips back and forth from the shop or the hen house. So get a bigger basket. Put the eggs in there. You'll save yourself several trips. You're also less likely to break them, because the more eggs you transport singly, the more likely they're to drop by themselves. Whereas if they're all eggs together, they'll be supporting each other, forming a lovely shell-like wall. Also, how can you focus on several separate eggs at a time? Whereas if it's just a basket of eggs, you can totally focus on that. You can get to the bottom of that. Do put all your eggs in one basket. I beg of you. Thanks, fellow Egypts. See you soon.
This has been a production of the Headstuff Podcast Network.